What's up, guys? It's Casey, and I'm not sure if you know this because we don't do a great job of marketing it, but here I am to let you know that we have some badass tutors on our website. And if you are looking for that one-on-one special quality time to ask all your dying questions, set up a study plan, help you figure out where to start, help you break down a mock exam, maybe you didn't pass and it just wasn't your time, which is okay. They will help you get back on the horse and get you to pass your test once and for all. So head over to www.studynotesaba.com. Under resources, you're going to find tutoring, and you can book with any of our really amazing tutors. They've all gone through the collective, so they know their shit. Love you. Mean it. Mwah. Study Notes ABA.
ABA in a little X-rated way. It's behavior, bitches.
Hey guys, it's Liat
and Casey,
and we are here with episode 162. Casey, take it away.
All right, 162. Use behavior analysis to persevere anything you do.
Boom. Persevere in anything you do.
In anything you do. This, guys, the rhymes are getting better as we get older, so welcome to the show. let's do some reinforcement.
Let's go. Let's see what nice things you guys have to say about us. Before we get started, we like to get ourselves excited, hot, and bothered.
And I do love some of the new reviews coming in. This is from Gypsy29, titled...
Gypsy Rose. Oh, my gosh. She listens? I'm just kidding. I wish.
Girl who's trying to be a BCBA. Thank you for helping me understand the concepts of ABA. You guys are amazing. I've been listening to you amazing ladies since 2019 when I started my grad program. Keep doing what your ladies do. Love you. Mean it. Wow. 2019. It is 2024.
They've been listening to us consistently.
Oh, my
for that
heart
long.
Is so happy.
Thank you Whoa. So much. That really means a lot.
I didn't even know we've been doing it for that long. And how the hell did we do that?
Alan. Thank you, Alan.
Our producer.
My agree. Alan rules. Today's behavioral principles are DRA, DRI, reinforcement, crisis management, delayed reinforcement, shaping, stimulus control, discrimination training, and pairing.
So anyways, we have had this person reach out, and I got the email, and I suck at going through the emails, but when I got it, I thought he was really cool. He is in the field. And he has written a book. And he also, when I talked to him, talked a lot about similar things that I see happening in our field that need to be addressed. And we had a really good pre-interview. So I'm going to do a quick introduction. And John, I want to welcome you now because I need you to help me pronounce your last name. Is it Borgen or Borgen?
It is Borgen.
Borgen.
You were right the first time. Borgen.
Thank you. Borgen. I'm usually right the first time. Okay.
All right. So he is a doctor in psychology and clinical psychology from Nova Southeastern University, where he specialized in the treatment of severe behavior disorders under the guidance of Bud Mace or Mass. Not sure, but he might be a cool guy. Dr. Borgen completed his postdoctoral fellowship at Kennedy Krueger Institute.
Krieger.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
She's going through a lot.
John Hopkins School of Medicine's Pediatric Feeding Disorder Program. He continued his clinical work in pediatric feeding disorders at the Oregon Institute of Technology, where he also taught undergraduate and graduate courses in applied psychology, applied behavior analysis, and marriage and family therapy. I could use you. Thank you. We're so excited to have you. And I want to talk about your book that you've written and a ton of other things. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me on the show. I guess just to get started, I'd say the book came from that lineage of professional career where there's a lot of talk about self-care. There's a lot of talk about this is what you need to do to take care of yourself, whether you're in grad school, no matter what that next benchmark is, if it's capstone, if it's master's, if it's passing an exam, if it's doctoral level stuff, internship, there always seems to be a next thing to stress over. They always told you, take care of yourself. But nobody ever really followed through on that.
Ever.
And it came to me at one point where I know all this clinical psychology. I know this behavior analysis. I have some familiarity with acceptance commitment therapy stuff and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Why am I not applying this to myself to promote my own self-care? With the idea being that someday maybe I can then affect other people's self-care.
Right. So tell them, like, first, that intro I gave was like just a total, like, you know,
I have a few questions on it.
I want to know, like, who are you really? And you're in the field. How long have you been in the field? Tell us about yourself and how you became, like, able to write a book.
Absolutely. I am a proud Scani. I come from the dead center part of the state, a town of under 1,000. We did not have a stoplight. We had one four-way stop intersection. And after my bachelor's degree in child psychology, I ended up moving back with my mom, and she let me know in no uncertain terms that that was not a long-term arrangement. And there was a residential treatment facility for children and adolescents that my sister and sister-in-law had worked at previously. So I applied there and I was hired on. And they did applied behavior analysis. They just never called it applied behavior analysis. They taught functions of behavior. If a child is engaging in some sort of non-appropriate behavior for attention, do not provide attention. We ran token economies. We ran DRL and DRO for their timeouts and everything along those lines. And I wanted to go to grad school to learn more of the talk therapy end of it, which the irony of that is I am not a natural kid person. You walk a kid in front of me and I'm not just the person that gets down on their level and readily establishes rapport. I can get there, just not right off the bat.
Yeah.
And that led me to clinical psychology, and that eventually led me to Nova Southeastern University for a doctorate, where I ended up in Bud Mace's behavioral assessment class, and they wanted him to teach checklists. They wanted him to teach survey forms and the types of things that parents and teachers
That's
can
called
fill
indirect
out.
Assessments for those that are listening.
Those are very indirect assessments. They tell you more about what the person wants you to know.
Right.
Than what is actually going on in very many cases.
Subjective versus objective.
Very subjective. I can probably count the percentage being around 25% where everything was listed as an issue. And that was more telling me, I need help for this kid, then it was saying, literally, this child is high on externalizing problems, internalizing problems, academics, sleep, and everything on down the line. He taught us functional analysis. He taught us descriptive assessment. He taught us narrative assessment. And I then spent the next 3 years working in his severe behavior disorders program with a client that we had 30 hours a week. He was 10 to 12 years old, depending on where I was in my grad school career. And he engaged in moderate to high rate, moderate magnitude, self-injurious behavior by striking himself on the head. So I was the lead on his case the entirety of the time, helped him come a long way in that passion for client service and then that passion for science as it relates to ensuring the best level of client service is something that I took with me to early intervention, pediatric feeding, and then ultimately into the classroom where I thought, well, I want a broader audience than just these 10, 15, 20 people in front of me. So I'm going to strike out on my own.
That's kind of exactly what we did, is that we wanted to teach. I always like the level of passion we have for behavior analysis and being able to now teach thousands and thousands of students through the podcast and our test prep program. I'm coming into contact with so much more reinforcement every day and allowing the people to like learn from the lessons that I went through of, you know, we talk about those robots and like when you first become a behavior analyst, you're like, I'm not a person anymore. I'm just this like thing. And I teach them to be humans and to relate to people. And I think that we have reached more people than we could have ever done if we stayed in the clinic.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, you get to feel like, I mean, maybe it's like a power trip on the other side. It's like, whoa, I could reach so many more people and I have so much more power to help on a larger scale. You know, it was like that hunger.
Yeah, that flexibility of the repertoire, of whether it's what somebody's doing with a client or how they're applying it to their own life, or that they're going to take behavior analysis and they're going to go off and be an entrepreneur, or that they are one of the very, very many and growing proportion of ABA students that don't want to go into autism spectrum disorder treatment and they want to branch out into something. And when somebody says, well, you could do OBM, maybe they don't want to do OBM, and they can bring that flexibility and that passion along with. And I absolutely agree that there's just so many more opportunities to contact reinforcement when you're out in the real world. Of course, I'm preaching
scary,
to the choir
though.
Saying,
definitely scary.
Yeah, there's no safety net. There's
no like, oh, this is my 401k and my health insurance. And it's like, all right, I want to do it. And I know I have the passion, but it is definitely scary. And so I want to know, like, through your long history of everything and then writing this book, what is your book about? And what I want to write a book. So now I'm like super interested in how you did that.
Yes. The history behind writing the book is that I found especially in academic work, that I wasn't regularly contacting the reinforcers that are the reason why I am in this field. And the number one is that feeling of this client is better off from me having worked with them. This student mm-hmm. is better off from having me worked with them. This colleague, this supervisor, and having a much wider reach with a book than those day-to-day interactions. And unfortunately, no matter what setting you're in, you're much more likely to hear about the ways that you have not lived up to somebody's expectations of you, the ways that you have exceeded those expectations. I used to keep a folder in my email called Greats. I think it functions the same way you're reading the reviews at the beginning of the podcast functions, that I would save any students saying that I had an impact on their career or their life, or just funny, humorous
like a
things.
Testimonial
so that I could
of something
go
that at. Makes you feel, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have one too.
And I started writing on the side on weekends, and I just could not find the time, find the energy to continue to do that. So that's why I ended up leaving my position, because I wanted to devote myself to this full time. That doesn't have to be everybody's route. In fact, I think folk that are trying to bridge a current career to hopefully a side hustle to a full-time other thing could take, whether it's writing on their own time, which the real benefit of it is, well, the benefit and the drawback is you are your own audience. And because you're
you have to recruit your own reinforcement.
I tried tying my reinforcement to just the process of writing and not what I had written as far as the quantity of words or the quality of those words, just that I had spent an hour or two in front of the computer or with the clipboard or walking the dog with my iPhone up to my mouth, voice narrating a passage that had come to me or anything along those lines. And that's really what led me to writing a book and focusing on, of course, leaving a job makes it a little bit more tenuous, but focusing on the process and that I'm trying to keep as engaged. I'm trying to keep it as flexible. I'm trying to keep it so that it has this inherently reinforcing quality because, yeah, even my book is not long. It's 120 some odd pages with a little extra there. You need to take breaks from it from time to time just because
so how
it gets
long
to be like the sound
write?
Of your own voice.
Oh my God. I never listened to the podcast ever. how long did it take you?
Probably 4 months for a first draft that I sent off. And that's a separate story, but 4 months for a first draft and then bouncing it back and forth, a couple of people that were kind enough to help me with some editing. Another, I'd say, month or so that way.
So we get it. You probably started listening to us back when you were studying for your exam, but our hope is that our material helped you pass the test, and now you are a badass BCBA in the field. So if you are, you know that you need these things called CEUs. Yes, you do. And now SNAVA has some of the best ever CEUs. They're interesting. They're going to help you learn and get you those things that you need to get every 2 years. So head over to ceu.studynotesaba.com and check out our collection of CEUs. Love you, mean it.
So, I mean, as I'm looking through the book sitting here, it's actually, I mean, I'm someone who is overwhelmed by a lot of words, and it's actually written in a way.
It's very real.
I mean, I like the font size. I like the titles, the subject areas, the tables within it. So I want to know, like, who is this book for? Like, when you wrote it, like, what your intention was for who to read it?
My intention was for anybody that is interested in changing their behavior to be able to read this book. I had in the back of my mind, they say when giving feedback, give it to somebody who reads at the seventh grade level. I didn't want to use big jargony words. I didn't want any of that. If people want jargony words, that's great. There is a whole host of books and people that can give them the hashtag Catania. Yeah. The super precise words. And I wanted it to be relatable. A large amount of the book, I spent talking as if I was talking to a friend, giving them advice. Mm-hmm. Or talking to a much more general audience, because I have 6+ years of trying to teach single case design to students. And I know how quickly multiple baseline can lose a person.
Yeah.
I know how quickly negative reinforcement can lose them when you say, no, it's not reinforcing up quote unquote bad behavior. It's taking something and then they're gone.
Yeah.
It's removing and increasing and
yeah,
all of that jazz.
It's so hard to like transfer out of that mindset.
No, but like I love this. Like as I'm looking at it, and I'm sorry that I did not read it so much before the episode.
Leah never prepares.
This is like how she organized.
No worries.
I have this like body doubling issue that I've read about with ADD, where it's like you need someone sitting next to you to actually do it. So like as soon as I'm there, it's like now I'm like
you're invested.
I mean, I have to say, like, you know, writing the entire curriculum for teaching the collective, our test prep program, and you know, trying to get people engaged in the Cooper book. Like I'm like, if they could just read the sections of this, like the way that you've explained different topics, such as like the variable ratio schedule, mm-hmm. looking at pictures on your iPhone, seeing which ones, which are good, like come up in your feed on social media, which ones you like, talking about the consequence-based interventions. It just feels like so much more digestible.
I knew you were going to love it.
And I'm so sorry that I am honest.
She's like, always honest.
I value honesty over blowing smoke for sure. And I have to give some of that credit to the students that have been in my classes, that their attention and their feedback has shaped my behavior, not only in the course, but in the book. I, of course, couldn't put videos in the course. One of my favorite things was to get, if you ever watch Family Guy, there's a series of scenes where Peter Griffin fights this guy in a chicken suit.
Yes.
And I would have them operationally define aggression and mm-hmm. take data on those scenes, because they would have a great amount of attention, and then that would
so much more real
a conversation about data collection that was so much more real than me inventing a hypothetical client
yep.
and talking about the various types.
Yeah. It's the more I even watch, just like we did this thing recently on like the Love is Blind. It's like really hot right now. Everyone's watching Love is Blind, and the behaviors that are going on, you're like, oh my gosh. Or like Dr. Phil episodes, I'm like, it's so behavioral. Like he says things like, oh, stimulus control and this. And I'm like, I love to post those real things so students can see that.
Yes. I'm starting to dabble in the TikTok.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the only subject that I have readily is my dog. So my dog is now getting things hung on him, like man for more food and discriminative stimulus and CMOR for yeah. the whole moving experience.
I was before I had a kid. It was like my dog. Now my dog's kind of lost his center stage.
Now it's Kobe. But that's yes, what makes yes. the difference for, and it also makes our field more like relatable, because a lot of people think, oh my God, no one, you guys are just robots, you're this. And that's not true. Or maybe it was true at some point, but we've come so far. And I know the field's in a really rough spot right now, but the more people I talk to, like you, like I interviewed someone last week who's been in the field for 25 years, and he was on the same page as you are of like, and just like getting you on the podcast, getting more people to talk about the science and the passion that's been in the field for so long. is incredible.
Absolutely. That was a backup reason to why I wrote the book, is that I became a little sick and tired of people saying that's not behavior analytic.
Right.
I had a colleague that I can still remember their voice coming from down the hallway saying, oh, mindfulness, that's a psychology thing. Go talk to Dr. Borgen. And I'm sitting there going, one, I'm not going to yell down the hallway back at her. That's not appropriate workplace behavior. But the second thing is, just because it is not easy to use behavior analysis with, doesn't mean that we can't start applying the terminology, figure out what we can operationally define and measure, mm-hmm. and take it from there so that we can advance our understanding. The RFT folks seem to have no problem working with thoughts and verbal behavior. Oh, and that whole
total,
stuff just
total flexibility
blows
there.
My mind.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah, expanding behavior analysis and associated fields to speak to more than just the, like you said, the robotic nature of, oh, I have aggression that's maintained by escape. I am going to do the DRA plus the escape extinction, and then we're going to do this preference assessment first to try and find the most post reinforcers. And it's more than that.
It's more than that. It's like, and it's, I think we talked about this in the interview, but like coming from like those soft skills of, yes, of course you could come in there and say all those things, but until you, and I know you said you're not the best at pairing immediately with like a kid. I'm not either. That's something I struggle with. Liat's amazing at it. She will spend days just pairing, and I'm like very type A, get to the point. But that's something that I want anyone listening to know, that it's okay to take that time to pair.
It's absolutely okay to take that time. I do more with stimulus control when I'm starting, mm-hmm. in that I'm trying to find those instructions that a client is incredibly likely to follow.
High P.
So if I, so if I find something that they're engaging with and they set it down for a while, I might pick it back up and just hold it in front of me to see if they reach for it. And then if they reach for it, I'll say, oh, you can take it. And they do, and I'll be, oh, good job following directions.
Yeah.
Because you're right, I'm not that natural. And there are so many different ways to work with a client that you have no history with.
Totally. It's scary, though. I remember going into like, my first time, I always worked with adults. So I'm really good with adults with autism. And, you know, I can do that all day. But going into a preschool, I was like, what the F do I do with these kids? Like, how do I play? What's an, like, I'm trying to do a VB map. And I'm like, I don't know how to even like engage in an echoic with them. Like, I literally am like, da, la, 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 la. Like, they're like, go take them to the bathroom. I'm like, take them to the bathroom? What do you mean? How am I can't touch that kid. Like, what do you mean? Like, everything was just so awkward for me because I've just always worked with adults. And it's like, yeah, I can wipe an adult's ass all I like. I've done it for 10 years. But like a kid's, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what do I do? How do I can't toilet train. I don't know how to do that. Like, I worked in group homes and residential and community settings, and I've got that down, but the kid thing is definitely hard. And I think a lot of people in our field think the adult thing is hard because that's their interaction is with kids mainly. But yeah, that was hard for me to wrap my head around.
I ended up using it to my benefit when I did preschool observations, because most children did not find me to be an appetitive stimulus and not engage in behavior coming toward me. And the child that got up immediately walked over, told me their name, and started engaging in conversation, I would just make the mental note of, I bet you you're the one that I'm here to see, because you're definitely engaging in a lot of behavior to get attention that doesn't seem normative for the rest of the kids in this classroom. And sure enough, more times than not, they would be the ones following the teacher around, not following instructions, engaging in behavior that they were told not to do to get the reprimand. And yeah, sometimes you got to take that weakness and make it a strength.
I love that. Take the weakness and make it a strength.
Yeah, certainly. And I definitely can empathize with your background and residential care work. You give me a kid screaming at me, trying to hit me. I know exactly what the protocol says. In fact, that was the revelation to me in that setting, is I'm not here to compel this child to behave.
Right.
I'm here to run their behavioral programming with heart, with sensitivity as being a person, but doing so in a way that they're most likely to make progress. And it's not my job to stop this tantrum. Mm-hmm. It's my job to make everybody safe.
Yeah.
And it's my job to do what I can to facilitate the client then engaging in those self-regulatory behaviors or contacting those sources of reinforcement so that they start to bring their own behavior in line with what we would consider appropriate in a residential setting. You give me an ambiguous situation where there aren't clearly defined rules. Oh yeah, I'm terrible with that.
Yeah. No, but I love what you said about the fact that sometimes when you go into those situations and there is that big tantrum or that big behavior, you think as a BCBA now that because you're certified, you have to stop it. And what mm-hmm. you just said is perfect, is you don't have to stop it. You have to make sure that the environment and you're actually learning through that behavior and you're watching and what's happening. And it's not a failure on your part if the tantrum doesn't stop. It's a failure on your part if you're not able to, you know, take the right, like, all right, this is what's happening. Everyone's safe. Okay, I can control this stuff. That tantrum might continue for 20 minutes. Like I had an adult who would, it came out and I mean, I know I hate saying this, but nowhere, there was always an antecedent, but, and it would be so escalated that like the cops would have to come. I'd be chasing him down the road. He would rip his toenails off. I mean, it would go on for the entire day. And the best thing I could do was support his mom. Like, hey, I'm here. I've got it. Like, yes, we might have to like deal with this, but we're going to control the situation, control the environment, keep him safe. And at the end of it, I'd be like, wow, I failed. Like he tantrumed for 6 hours. But the mom would be like, thank God you were here. And I was like, I don't even know if I did anything. I'm like, I literally just was like making sure. She's like, no, I would have like, I could never have done what you did.
Yes. Just being level-headed, a professional in the room. And one of the many things that I've learned almost everything in my professional journey through shaping and directly contacting contingencies. It's not really been a lot that's been given down.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I would impart is those difficult situations, that client is teaching you something. Mm-hmm. They're teaching you how to better discriminate what their antecedents are or may be, or they're teaching you how to better engage in crisis management. I can think of a number of clients where we had one in pediatric feeding, and we were going through this series of prompting because the client would not close their lips around the spoon. Mm-hmm. So they would scrape the food off with their teeth, which is not very efficient, right, and the meals would take very long. So we tried all of these different prompting strategies, and this client, we're sitting there, we're banging our heads against the wall, like which one of these prompting strategies is going to work? What worked is holding the spoon up in front of the client and waiting for him to close his lips around it. It took 5.5-6 minutes because he tried scraping it with his teeth and he looked at us like, I get praise now or I get prompt now. And we're like, no, we're just going to hold it here until it happens or the session is up.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him a while. He looked
that
around.
That feeling
the room.
Is the best. Yeah. When you like figure it out, it's like the best.
Yes, it was. And he lit up and I didn't light up because I didn't want to light up in the moment, but I gave him his praise. And then, yeah, that's one of the ones where you leave the room and you give yourself the old pat on the back. Like, sometimes,
like, wow.
Sometimes there are wins for sure.
I just think everything that you talked about during this podcast is so amazing. And just like the amount of behavior principles we've covered alone is crazy.
Oh yeah. And within your book, it's like, it literally is like a walking task list.
Yeah. And I had to be mindful with that because I didn't want to lump everything that I wanted to communicate about behavior analysis.
It's actually like broken down, but I'm saying as someone who's teaching test prep, I'm like, oh my God, I want my students to read this. I want them to see this part in it. It's so well explained. It's this, but I do also think it's digestible for someone who's like, has never even seen this or even thought about these different things. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Where can someone get this?
They can get a e-copy for sure right now on perseverebook.com, PERSEVEREBOOK.com. I can spell book. Really? I can.
We'll put it in the show notes.
And I appreciate any forgiveness and grace you can give me about the still typos mitigating through. I wanted to get it out into the world. There's going to be another editing pass, and then I will send it off to a print on demand company, and then people can go to the website, follow that link, and then get a print book.
The science of making change stick. Like, we all need this.
Yes, and I did it entirely by myself, self-published, which is amazing. Also scary, unreal. But
yeah, a big deal.
Big deal.
You get the trade-off of the $9.99 that I charge for the ebook. I get to keep those profits. None of it goes to Jeff Bezos. None of it goes to whoever's running Apple or any of that. You get the lack of publicity, depending on some things involved there, but you get 100% of the autonomy. And one of the things that I am, if you ask me what I wanted the most, is I want people to email me. I want people to request either that I can help them with what they're going through, or they can be like, okay, page 62, What are you trying to say there? I've read that paragraph 3 times, because then I can go in and I can change that in both the PDF and the EPUB. And because of the way the print on demand service works, I could just go type that back into the manuscript.
So literally your feedback is what you are looking for, in the sense of, I am doing this on my own.
We get students sometimes. I thought you were saying you're looking for anyone to email you. I was like, I literally could not relate less.
There will be a day when that cuts off, but starting off.
It's the best when you get someone who has a student. Like, I'm like, whoa, were you a grammar major in college? I'll be like, I just want to let you know I love you guys, but you forgot a comma here or this. You actually spelled this wrong. This word.
Oh, I will find those. When I find those students, I bring them in.
We
and
reinforce
I'm like,
them.
I will send you anything, merch. I will send you a free mock. If you want to be my eagle eyes on a mock exam or anything we publish, please. So I think that is absolutely great that you're doing that.
And I had 2 wonderful editors that did all of that. Of course, then I went back in and started messing with the content. And when I started messing with the content, I messed with the grammar and I messed with the punctuation. And I have a whole riff about Adobe InDesign and laying out your book and how that can create issues that start to pop up. So I absolutely 100% do not want to throw my friends and colleagues for their wonderful and very appreciated help throughout.
So if you guys are listening and you want to be the hashtag teacher's pet like I have been, you need to go to the website that he said. Say it again.
Perseverebook.com, or you can email perseverebook@gmail.com.
Okay, and you want to read this? You're studying right now and you want to get out of the Cooper book and still learn about applied behavior analysis in a real way, and you also want to help John with his book, go for it, and then we'll send you some cool merch if John tells us that you emailed him and are helping him.
Thank you, and they can help me with my YouTube and my TikTok and my Twitter.
I love it.
I will take all the help I could get at this point.
TikTok really is so hard. A pain in the ass.
I love it, but it's hard.
It is a constant exercise in not relying on likes and comments to be the reinforcer, on noticing any shaping of how efficiently or how effectively I create them. Mm-hmm. And being in sports psychology, they talk about process goals versus outcome goals. And basically, process goals are practice, and outcome goals are the game. Mm-hmm. And I focus much more on what duration and how I'm engaging in my TikTok behavior, rather than when I click publish and it gets 72 likes.
That's delayed.
72 views and 3 likes and a comment. And I'm sitting there going, why did I do this? This is something to learn from. This is part of the process. I will learn from this and I will continue to move forward.
Well, let us know. Follow us on TikTok. We'll follow you.
Oh, I didn't know y'all were on TikTok.
Study Notes ABA.
Oh, okay. You usually advertise your Instagram. So I just assumed that's all there was. Oh, okay. We're not there yet.
We're getting there with Behavior Bitches TikTok, but right now it's just our test prep. But it's funny. If you want to laugh, you go watch it. There's a lot of funny stuff there. Leah is hilarious. So
yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. There's some lacking in the ABA TikTok. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Agreed.
Uh-huh. We're working on it.
We're trying. Keep reinforcing our behavior. We'll reinforce yours.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. You are something amazing, and I love what you're doing. I am so excited that Liat is actually taking the time to read the book. I'm proud of you, I'll tell you
what happened with my ADD this episode. I've been quieter than I normally am. As soon as I pulled it up, I started like digging into the different parts, and now I've been like reading throughout. I think it's great. And if I am staying engaged, that means it's something good.
Yeah.
Because my attention span is shorter than a goldfish.
Yes, it is.
I definitely take that as the highest compliment to have so continued engagement with the book. I have sent out some copies to students.
And I'm going to actually reach out to you on the side about book writing in general, because I'm trying to do the same thing.
So. Absolutely. I would much rather people learn from what I can tell them than mm-hmm. have to learn everything. I learned everything about self-publishing and writing a book.
Yeah.
By doing it myself and learning what worked well and what didn't work so well.
So we'll have
I'd
a private
be happy
meeting.
To take some time.
Yeah, yeah, I would love that. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You guys know where you could find us. You could find us on behaviorbitches.com, on Facebook at Behavior Bitches Podcast, Instagram at Behavior Bitches Podcast. You're not going to find us on TikTok yet.
Well, you will, but it's Study Notes ABA. So if you're listening, you're probably hopefully following us on TikTok at Study Notes ABA.
Exactly, but not Behavior Bitches yet. Go leave us a 5-star review. And as always, love ya.
Mean it.
This show was produced by Pretty Easy Podcasts and made possible by listeners like you. If you ever thought of doing your own podcast, please visit prettyeasypodcasts.com.